Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
It is 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. The Israel Report, brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israel's property management and sales.
The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
Rolene Marks, a very good morning to you. How are you?
A very good morning to you too. I'm always happy to start my weekend off talking to you.
So there's unfortunately a very difficult story and a very unpleasant one that started to unfold yesterday. The story of a 7-year-old Palestinian child who died, which is obviously a terrible thing. But what actually happened?
Well, this is what everybody wants to know. There are conflicting reports. You know, when the news story initially broke, the story put out by Wafa News, which is a Palestinian news agency, and one that is not always reputable. You know, we've also got to take into account that very often when you're talking about Palestinian health ministries or news agencies, they are often the voice or more often than not, the voice of either Hamas or Fatah. So there's definitely an agenda behind these stories. And when it comes to stories like this being released, we are cynical because we've had the recent experience of Shirin Abu Akle, which, to sound very cynical this morning, has more than a little agenda pushing behind it. It became very heavily politicized as the story broke. A couple of years ago, many of you will remember the story about Muhammad al-Dura, the Palestinian boy who Palestinians said at the time was killed by Israeli forces. It was then investigated and found that he wasn't killed by security forces, but by Palestinians. There are all kinds of controversies, and this is potentially one that could be one of those. So yesterday the story broke that a 7-year-old Palestinian boy fell to his death and died, which is what happens if you fall to your death, as a result of being chased by the IDF. And the story that we heard afterwards is that our troops went to his family home to ask his father, please stop your child from throwing rocks at cars. This is in the West Bank town of Tuku. Stop him throwing rocks at cars. It's putting his life in danger. According to the IDF official at the time, at no time was there any violence. At no time was there any raid on the home. It was a very, very civil conversation. And then we hear the conflicting report that the little boy actually died of a heart attack.
Yeah, because I was going to say, one report said that he died of a heart attack when being questioned by the Israeli forces. The other one said he died when he fell from a building or something like that, being chased by Israeli forces. None of this actually seems to make any sense. There's little consistency with it.
Well, there's even more inconsistency, because one story is that he was vomiting blood in the car and was rushed to hospital and pronounced dead there. And the other story is that after the soldiers came and spoke to his father, he just collapsed and died. So what is the real story here? Now, the IDF have immediately launched investigations into the matter. We haven't had an official statement from the IDF, and this is because there is an ongoing investigation. And the United States Department of State, they are weighing in already, demanding an investigation, saying that they are absolutely heartbroken. Now, Israel is starting to get a little rubbed up with this constant interfering by the U.S. State Department into issues here, because when issues like this happen, there are immediate investigations. Israel is a democracy. The IDF is a democratic military force with a very strict code of conduct, one that it has to uphold, and we have learned from mistakes in the past where we haven't gotten ahead of the narrative or haven't released information at the outset, that these things can run away. I mean, already on social media, there were pictures of him. There were also pictures of another child who incidentally comes from another conflict, that he was a martyr, that he was martyred, you know, while being chased by RDF soldiers. And some say that he was martyred in clashes. So we know the narrative that comes out of these situations.
Yeah, and I found I had a similar reaction when I saw the US demanding it. Well, I'm not really sure what right they have to demand anything, really, in terms of an investigation, as though Israel wouldn't be motivated to conduct their own investigation. Really quite bizarre. Did Mahmoud Abbas really call US Secretary of State, "you little boy"?
Well, according to a recording that has been obtained by the Times of Israel, the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas met with a group of Palestinian Americans last week. This is probably either before or after he made that very, very bizarre 48-minute rant at the United Nations. I think the longest speech that there was last week, you know, when you speak at the United Nations, if you look at the lectern, there is a green light for, you know, giving your allotted time. And then there's an orange light that kind of says, listen, you're getting on a bit much. And then there's a red light that says, you know, shut up now. The red light was blinking and
abort,
he was going
abort,
full
abort,
tilt.
Yeah.
Yeah, abort, abort, somebody mute him.
Absolutely.
But he apparently in this address with Palestinian Americans was talking about the what he calls the American practice of not holding Israel to account or allowing them not rather to pressure the Palestinians rather than Israel. And he says, I told Blinken, you little boy, don't do that. I know your history. And
what does that mean?
He's quite proud of the fact that he belittled the U.S. Secretary of State. And he says, you know, he recalled to Antony Blinken about how during the 1956 Suez Crisis, Israel agreed to withdraw its forces from the Gaza Strip after President Eisenhower ordered Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion to do so. So he says that apparently, and this is according to Mahmoud Abbas. Now, everything Mahmoud Abbas says from a historical perspective,
I take with a pinch of salt.
Given his doctoral dissertation, he says, the U.S. president called the Israeli prime minister and asked, David, have you gotten out of Gaza? Tonight you'll withdraw and tell me yourself that you've done so. Now, he says that... the lesson from this is not to say, my beloved, do this or don't do that, but to actually, you know, force Israel to do something. That, you know, America is not using its power. Now, Israel, if you had noticed during Biden's visit to the country a couple of months ago, he was gently but firmly put in place by Prime Minister Lapid, you know, exactly where Israel will and won't tolerate being pushed. And we had it just a couple of weeks ago with comments that we need to change our rules of engagement, and a very, very firm answer from our alternate prime minister, our prime minister, and our defense minister saying, thank you very much, but we'll make those decisions.
Absolutely right. I'd love your reaction to that. 34519 or 061-895-1019. It does, unfortunately, talk to the complexity of the relationship between Israel and the United States, where because of that closeness, I guess, there might be a presumption that the U.S. can get involved. But obviously those lines need to be respected. Zelensky visits Babi Yar. Tell us about what's happening there.
Well, yesterday and today is the 81st anniversary of Babi Yar. This is probably the worst shooting massacre in the history of the Holocaust, where Nazis killed over 30,000 Jews. And this is just on the outskirts of Kyiv in Ukraine, in 2 days in 1941. So we remember yesterday and today this most hurtful, appalling and atrocious massacre. Now, yesterday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky visited the Babi Yar Memorial to commemorate the tragedy, to commemorate the genocide. He is Jewish himself. We also have to remember that at the moment, with Russia's offensive in Ukraine, Russia is using the analogy that they are trying to wipe out Nazism from Ukraine. And I know that there are some listeners who say, well, you know, we can't forget what happened to Jews in Ukraine, and therefore, you know, maybe we shouldn't be supporting Ukraine. We also have to remember Russia was also not terribly kind to its Jews during the Holocaust or in the decades after, and including today. So the president placed a commemorative lamp next to the menorah. If you look at images of the memorial site, there's a huge menorah and a sculpture as well. And he also said any inhumane regimes pose a threat to all humanity. Criminals who cause such tragedies must be punished so that dictators and tyrants are reluctant to repeat something similar in the future. So I think it doesn't take a genius to see that those words were definitely targeted very much at Putin and Russia.
And of course, it's been a very difficult week in terms of anti-Semitism in Russia, where we're starting to see a much more targeted or overt anti-Semitism. This is going to add to the pressure that Israel is feeling in terms of protection of the Jewish citizens in Russia. That I'm sure is something that Israel's keeping a very close eye on.
Well, this is a very, very important point, because we have to remember that to date, Israel has tried to take as neutral as possible a stance between Russia and Ukraine. Yes, we have Russian army on our border. They're in Syria. We have to work in cooperation, or at least tell them when we are engaging in any kind of strikes in Syria. But also in recent weeks, we've heard Russian criticism for Israeli strikes in Syria, calling us, threatening civilians and damaging infrastructure and striking on Syrian sovereign territory. I don't know, maybe they aren't having a close enough look at what they're doing in Ukraine. So we've seen tension on that side, but we also can't forget that there is a massive Jewish community in Russia. And, Israel exists as the nation state of the Jewish people. And whenever there is a community of Jews under threat around the world, we will do everything that is in our power to ensure their safety, or at least their safe transport to Israel. And over the recent months, this has been impacted by the ongoing legal issue with the Jewish Agency for Israel and the work of the Jewish Agency in Russia to help get Jews to Russia. But we are seeing that anti-Semitism, and I won't even say creeping into Russian mainstream
media. It's marching. Dare we say goose-stepping in?
I think goose-stepping is the right term. You know, we've heard those ancient stereotypes that there are prominent Jewish supporters of Ukraine because they are greedy. You know, it's this kind of rhetoric. And Russian Jews just aren't patriotic enough. This is coming from the popular talk show hosts in Russia. So we've definitely seen that, when in times of crisis, blame the Jews. Very, very much present. And as you just so rightly said, goose stepping into the Russian media.
Weighing in on the conversation, he says, bottom line is no one was there for Jews when we needed them. We need to look after our own security. Well, I think, Yair, what complicates this is the fact that there are many Jews involved, both in Ukraine and in Russia, but all of whom are under tremendous strain and will be in need of protection as well, let alone the conversation still about assisting in a world where somebody does need to stand up. It's not a simple issue, I don't think. Rolene Marks, thank you as always. That is all we have time for. The Israel Report was brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israel's property management and sales.